Hello and welcome to On the Couch with M&M. M&M obviously for Maria and Manos.
This is where we go behind the scenes in real estate business ownership to give you great ideas and tips to help you create fun and profitable businesses so that you can live an extraordinary life.
Let's get started. Hello and welcome to another episode of On the Couch with M&M.
Today, we've got a special guest, Mr. Jeff White, former REIV president and now state director of CoreLogic for Victoria and Tasmania. Welcome to the episode, to the show, Jeff.
Thank you, M&M.
Yes.
Thank you.
We fumble through it every now and then, but it's all good.
Yes. M&M hasn't sued us for using their names.
It's good. Not to do with chocolate. But thanks for joining us today. And we're going to be talking about a few topics today. And one of my favourite topics is always talking about numbers. Yes. I couldn't have thought of a better person to come along from CoreLogic, obviously focusing on numbers and big data and all that. So going back to the statement of information, what is actually required if in its simplest of forms?
Yeah, so there's three main components of the information statement that must be on that statement. And that is the actual estimated indicative selling price. So if the vendor has provided you as the agent with a range that they're prepared to accept, and that's got to correspond with your estimate that you've put on your authority. So if you say to a vendor it's $8 to $8.50, mm-hmm. and that's on your authority, and the vendor perhaps hasn't given you a reserve or an asking price, that $8 to $8.50 has got to be on the information statement. So transparency between what you say to the vendor in terms of what it's worth and what you then say to the buyers on the information sheet. So that's one thing. The other is the median price for a similar property in that location. So if it's a house in Camberwell, a two-bedroom house, it needs to reflect the median of a two-bedroom house in Camberwell, either from either of the data suppliers.
Yes.
Yeah, CoreLogic, REIV or whoever, and you need to note that source on the information statement. The third thing, and probably one of the most important, is the comparable sales. Yeah. And the comparable sales need to be a minimum of three. And depending on whether it's regional or metropolitan will depend upon the radius, but three comparable sales. And, you know, that's where the estate agent needs to support the estimate that they put on the property by the comparable. So what they're supplying to the vendor in terms of estimated selling range and the comparables need to go to the vendor and also to the buyer on the information.
It's all about transparency. Yeah,
that's right.
Isn't
correct.
It?
That's right.
Just to clarify the indicative, because there's been some confusion on the indicative selling range and the agent's estimated range, because they are two different components. So
that's right.
So my understanding is that the estimated agent's range for Section 47A of the Estate Agents Act says that can be a 10% range. So I predict that the property is going to sit between 500 and 550,000.
Yes.
But if the vendor says, look, I'm going to be looking at offers around the 530, 540, we really can't go under the 530 mark. Would that be right? So the indicative selling range would be, say, 530 to 580.
So it's her advertising
price.
That's
right. The indicative,
Some vendors will want to give you a
price.
So if they give you a price and that is known to you, and particularly if it's noted on the authority, that then needs to go onto the information statement.
Yeah. Exactly.
But some vendors will say, and as we've experienced, look, you say it's worth $5 to $5.50, just get me some offers and I'll look at it.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, in that particular case, you would use your $5 to $5.50 because you haven't got an exact figure from the vendor.
Okay.
And you know that sometimes you say it's worth $5 to $5.50 and a vendor might say start at $600.
Yes.
Well, if that's the case,
then
you should put the $600 on your information statement.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Notwithstanding you said it's worth $5 to $5.50.
That's right. And you can't say to a purchaser that based on my comparables it's worth $600.
No, that's right.
So as long as again, total transparency to the vendor, total transparency to the purchasers. And then, you know, Mrs. Purchaser, properties in this area, medium house price is $550, the vendor wants $600.
That's right.
That's it. Simple conversation.
Yeah.
And if
there isn't any comparable sales, because we've had that as well, haven't we? We had some of our agents that they had properties that they're obviously in regional areas and there's been nothing for like over 12
right.
months.
Or it's a unique property, acres and stuff like that.
So what do you do there?
So in the information statement, you can actually disclose that there are no comparable properties to the subject property. However, that agent needs to be aware that if under scrutiny, they need to be able to demonstrate that, that there's no compromise. Find. That's right, exactly right.
Yeah.
So it may well be a comparable property, but sold 5 years ago. So therefore, that result's not comparable not, to this
no,
time.
Exactly.
So you need to very much be aware that that will be subject
put
to scrutiny
if
you're subject to an audit by Consumer Affairs Victoria.
Yeah.
Which
is fair enough.
That is fair enough. Yeah.
Look, I think we really got to take the understanding that we're charging vendors $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 for the average sales commission in Melbourne. Like we've been paid a lot of money.
Yes.
People are paying us for our expertise, and if we can't provide that information as experts in the real estate market, then what are we doing?
Yes, that's right. So the information statements can be produced online via the subscribers, and we're all set up to be able to produce those information
it's
statements.
It's actually quite easy with ARPI data too. And it gives you the median price, it gives you everything. All you've got to do is put your pick your three most comparable sales.
Arthur Price, our fellow director here at the Frankston office, is your greatest fan. He goes, man, I love this.
I love ARPI
tick,
data.
Tick, I can have it done in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Goes,
it's
or,
so easy.
Less than in 10 seconds.
It is so easy. It's so, actually quite good. Yeah.
And a lot of estate agents have been providing comparables already. So
we were.
So you get into that routine and it's just an extension of what you've been doing.
Exactly.
So that's good.
Yeah.
And I point out that it's only residential property, not commercial. And if you're selling a shop or anything, it's not affected
applicable
by this. And it really is for the radius of comparables is fairly tight.
Mm-hmm.
So if the comparables are all falling outside that radius, you can still supply them if you want to, but you don't necessarily have to. That's right.
There's some flexibility there for the agents.
Well, if they're not comparable, you should not be putting them in there.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So
I think we've covered most things with regard to the new underquoting laws in Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. Mm. So it's all new listed properties from the 1st of May that you must provide the information statement.
Awesome. So another side of your job, CoreLogic, is to do surveys on vendors. I remember one of the great articles by Kylie Davis was the
amazing
perceptions of real estate agents out there in the marketplace. And I should have brought a copy with me, but it's absolutely fantastic. I've actually done a whole training session on the perceptions of real estate agents out there. So
yes,
as part of your role in CoreLogic, how do you find out that information from vendors and what they're really looking for? Or in your experience, what is it that a vendor is really looking for in selecting their agent out there in the marketplace?
Yeah, well, we survey, obviously, consumers, right through to clients and sellers, previous sellers, agents. Anyone we can survey, we will, to get some data, and that's the name of the game.
Yeah.
So in that report that Kylie did, that was a lot of survey from consumers, potential sellers, potential tenants, those sorts of people that made up that survey. And it was pretty clear that people want to deal with someone that is honest, ethical, trustworthy, provides data, you know, the things that we know, but it was sort of documented very clearly in that survey. And I don't think, to be honest, I think that's really what people want. Real estate is a people business, and it's 80% people, 20% property. So if you get the people part right, the rest will follow. And I think that's what people are looking for in an estate agent. And, you know, I think it's important that anybody coming into this industry, that they actually see it as a long-term career. It's not a short-term career opportunity to try and make as much money as possible.
No.
So ethical, you know, straightforward, honest, have all the information, become an expert in your area, all of those things that we know. And I think that's what vendors look for too.
Mm.
If you're going into a prospective listing and you're able to tick all of those boxes, you're a long way towards getting that listing, I would suggest. And that's been revealed by various surveys out there.
And you see it. You see all the very successful agents that all have all those qualities, don't they?
That's right.
I mean, there's a reason why they're there. But one
success
one of,
leaves clues.
It does.
Yes.
It does. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So look, and I don't think those that have been in the industry a long time will have survived the test of time, because they've got those attributes. If they don't, they won't survive. And it concerns me at times sometimes that people see this as a short-term gap to to making a lot of money, and that really worries me. And I go to conferences and conventions, and I hear people say what they do, and it that does concern me.
Yeah.
And it's about getting all of those the morals and the ethics and all of that right. Sure, you've got to work long hours, as we know, Manos.
It's part of the game.
That's right.
But look, it's something we mentioned in a previous episode. It's called balance, and real estate's really a lifestyle choice opposed to a 9-to-5 job.
It gives you heaps
and heaps of flexibility. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think everyone should have a stint at working in hospitality and then come back before they enter real estate, because they'll realize that, hey, yeah, hospitality or your traditional bricks and mortar 9 to 5, 5:30, it's a tough gig. A real tough gig. And retail is 7 days a week now.
You're more emotionally invested with real estate. So, you know, you can open up a shop and you can sell product and then you can close it at 5:30 and go home. And where that follows you, you know, your vendors, especially when you care, you know, if you're that type of real estate agent that all you want to do is, you know, help your vendors achieve a great result and help your buyers buy where they want. That I remember when I was listing and selling, that always was in my mind. You know, sometimes I used to sleep at night and dream about people. So it just doesn't leave you. It's just a constant 24-hour thing. But when you enjoy it, then, you know, it's not work, is it?
Exactly right.
And going back to the data and the perceptions of real estate agents out in the community, as business owners, and this podcast and the show is more for business owners agents looking at starting their own business, what should they be focusing on as a business owner when it comes to, obviously, the data that comes through their doors? Is there any particular advice you can give them in regards to capturing it and how they can nurture it and move it forward?
Well, clearly one of the best things that they need to do is have their own database, and that will develop over time. And working your own database is the best thing that you can do. So building that and keeping in touch with people on a regular basis is very critical. You can subscribe to the likes of CoreLogic that will provide you with the property data information, and we provide a lot of analytics around that, so that enables an estate agent to drill down and say, look, you know, for all the owners in this patch, this is what's happening in the market, and provide that information around it. And we can help the agents do that and become the expert in their areas. Opening your own business is not just a case of hanging your shingle out there. That's right. It requires an investment and again, the people around you to make it work. It comes down to the team and the association and the people around you.
People, isn't it?
That's exactly right. Yeah. We're in a people business, and people don't survive unless they have good people around them.
So if you were to mention a few habits, characteristic attributes of the most successful agencies, would you have a gut feel of who would make it and who wouldn't?
I think you do. And I think it comes down to ones that can connect with others and also those that are prepared to put in the hard yards and actually build those databases and the way that they communicate. It's not a case of just doing letterbox drops like we used to do 20 years ago and wait for the phone to ring. Gone are those days. It's about communicating and providing valuable information and data to property owners in your area. And if you become the expert in your area, people will want to deal with you. So that's the biggest takeaway I can give people, is to become the absolute expert in your area. Know that area by like the back of your hand.
Mm.
And then you will be able to demonstrate that to prospective sellers.
That's what we get paid for, isn't it?
That's right.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And some people take that for granted, and they actually don't believe in that or follow that rule.
Mm.
Yeah.
And if someone's thinking about opening up their own real estate agency, besides being a great sales agent out there, which is usually the traditional growth. Someone's out there, they're kicking goals, they've become a brand of themselves, and then they want to do it for themselves. What recommendations would you give someone who's aspires to open up their own agency?
Well, I think they've got to be very careful, because sometimes when you're a really good salesperson, you may not be a good business owner, and therefore align yourself with either a group such as your group, where you can get expertise. And you don't necessarily have to worry about everything about running a business, because you can assist them in that regard. However, if they do want to go out on their own, they need to be fully aware that at times you have to take your salesman hat off and put your owner of a business hat on. And some people find that very difficult.
And another 100 hats that you have to wear as a business
owner. Well, that's right, exactly. It's not just two. One. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
It's balancing the books. It's making sure.
Trust accounting and all of those other things.
Obligations,
And you can very easily, as a good salesperson or sales director or whoever you are, take your eye off the ball and suddenly your income's affected because you're looking at all this other part of your business. So it's a balancing act.
And if you don't enjoy doing that part, then you get a bit disheartened.
That's right.
Because you know what you love to do, which is listing and selling, you can't do anymore because you're too busy doing all that other stuff.
That's right.
So it's a bit of a catch-22. It's important to know what's involved and then try and outsource some of the things that you don't enjoy doing, or if you enjoy everything, then of course, you know.
Yeah. I don't think we all enjoy everything we do, but find out what absolutely you like strength. Doing and your strengths and probably focus on that. And it may not be actually owning a business. It might be working with somebody else or going to partnership or joining a franchise or a group or whatever it may be.
Being a business within a business, a lot of that model, I think that's, to us, what we envisage is that model is going to grow and grow and grow, because I do believe that's probably going to be the change in
we see it as the perfect balance, don't we? Yeah,
that's right.
Definitely.
Yeah.
The effective business unit, the business within a business, I think that will be the change that we see it from an agency perspective. Yeah.
Traditionally, really, really great salespeople haven't been fantastic business owners.
They've gone backwards in many cases.
Actually. So, you know, they might align themselves with a partner that can run the business and they still keep doing what they're doing. That can sometimes be a good way to go about it. Yeah. But absolutely look at all the fours and the negatives and focus on their own talents and what they like, and because otherwise it might be a costly mistake.
Yeah,
I think it's so just making sure that you know what's involved.
Correct.
You know, eyes 100%. Open. Make sure that you know from all aspects what is involved, what does it involve to have your own business. It's not just, like you said, putting your name at the front, open the door and
away you go. And the why. There's got to be a tangible why you want to go into business.
Yeah.
And get out and talk to people and talk to people that have been there and done and learn from other people, because don't repeat the mistakes others have done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's certainly more opportunity now, and it's a lot easier now to start a real estate office than what it was 10, 15 years ago. I think you need to be a lot more informed today. Yeah. But certainly it's a lot. The cost of entry has diminished enormously. But again, you have other factors involved in attracting talent, keeping up with compliance, legislation, employment law.
That's
right. So there's those added burdens when you start your own business.
Yeah.
The over-regulation in real estate. I mean, we are regulated every way we move.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not residential tenancies, sale of land, Estate Agents Act, everywhere. You know, so you've got to be across it as an officer and effective control.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And just to probably finish off the future of real estate, where do you see, everyone talks about disruption. I think it's been one of the most
talked about
topic for the last 3, 4, 5 years. But obviously, if with your history in real estate and the family heritage in real estate, you've seen change come all the way through. Where do you see the big change, if there is going to be a big change?
I think a lot of people have looked upon online as being a disruption, and I think it's actually not. I think it's the opposite. Those that embrace it and can use it and actually
it helps them. Yeah.
And I think it's actually in many ways made our industry more professional because such as the new legislation, you know, we're doing a lot more than we did 20 or 30 years ago.
Everything's visible now.
That's right. You can't hide.
Visibility.
That's right. There will always be models coming through and organisations that will attempt to disrupt, but there is no denying that it is a people business, and I don't think you will ever get one computer talking to another computer without someone interacting in between. So whether it's, you know, that type of model or not, you know, all online and you never see the buyer or seller, most people want to go through the property.
The human element is still important, isn't it?
Correct, that's right.
I say the last 30 metres, last 30 metres of the transaction, that is walking from the front of the driveway to the front door of the house, still needs to be taken by the real estate agent. There's too much emotion.
It's also guiding the vendor through the process.
People need help.
It's a huge,
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And you engage an agent for their help and advice and whether you're selling or buying. the growth industry in our area is buyer's agents. I mean, you know, now people are time poor and they're engaging somebody to act for them as a buyer. And so, again, that's about the human interaction. So things will change. It's just another way of doing business, but the industry will survive and be strong in the future. And I think all of the technology is just assisting us to do a better job.
Yeah.
Mm, I agree.
I think so. I agree with you as Well, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us on the Couch with
the M&M Show.
Yeah,
the M&M Show.
And
it was great having you. Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
and
you.
Look forward to working with you in CoreLogic.
Yeah,
it should be great.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So thank you for watching today.
And for more information, please go visit our Facebook page or our podcast on the Couch M&M through the iTunes store.
Awesome. And as always, if you like, please leave your comments below on our Facebook page or ask us any questions and we'll be happy to answer. We'll be checking in. Thank you.
Cheers.